BBC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
We think that this is a blatant political action for which there is no real justification by the Soviets.
I think it's going to be a death blow for the Olympic Games. They can't continue on in this format.
It's almost as though we had a friend who was bleeding and we refused him a tourniquet.
It's the first time in 6 years that we've seen any kind of justice being served to the Vietnam veterans.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Your ad agency is highly recommended.
Oh, thanks. What do you sell?
Fruits and vegetables. Here, I brought some along.
Oh, great. We'll do some TV spots.
Oh, I'd rather use radio.
Why?
TV is too expensive.
Well, look.
Anyway, people don't have to see my fruits and vegetables as long as they can hear them.
What?
When we play music on them.
Are you kidding?
No, see, I put an all-produce band together just for our radio commercial.
Oh, come on now.
Hand me that squash there.
How'd you do that?
Practice. I'm also proficient on three leafy vegetables and two tropical fruits.
Really?
It's economical to advertise on radio, and I can target the people who like to listen to fresh fruits and vegetables.
This band you...
7 rutabagas, 5 cucumbers, and a base broccoli.
Uh-huh.
So we'll play our theme song, Yes, We Have No Bananas, and then we'll eat our instruments, okay?
Okay.
You'll buy radio for us then?
Sure. Listen, could you teach me...
Sure. Here, start with the celery. You don't blow on celery. You strum it.
Oh, sorry.
Beginners.
Radio. Red hot because it works. For all the facts, call this station or the Radio Advertising Bureau.
Part of the pageantry associated with the Olympic Games is the transfer of the Olympic flame from Greece to the host country. The flame, housed in hurricane lamps, arrived at the United Nations this week. And correspondent Mark Shearer was on hand to watch it be carried to Los Angeles by a series of runners.
The Olympic flame begins its trip across America. The first two runners, Gina Hemphill, granddaughter of Jesse Owens, and Bill Thorpe, grandson of Jim Thorpe, leaving the United Nations on the first leg of a run through 33 states, a journey of some 9,000 miles. The torch scheduled to arrive in Los Angeles July 23rd in time for the start of the Summer Olympic Games. Mark Shearer, ABC News, New York.
Then, much of the glitter the Games provide was dulled by the announcement the Soviet Union made. Its team would not be coming to the Los Angeles Olympics. The Russians cited security reasons and accused the United States of undermining the Olympic Charter. The State Department was quick to react through its spokesman, John Hughes.
We think that this is a blatant political action for which there is no real justification by the Soviets.
In fact, said Assistant Secretary of State Richard Burt,
we have worked closely with the Soviet Union. The Los Angeles Organizing Committee has worked with the Soviets for months. We have made sure that their concerns about security and other arrangements were adequate. So there's just no foundation for the Soviet decision.
President Reagan heard about it during a meeting at the White House.
Sorry that they feel that way, and I think it's unfair to the young people that have been waiting for so long to participate in that, in those games.
To Marshall Goldman, an expert on the Soviets, there's no doubt as to their target.
I think this is a clear attempt on their part to embarrass President Reagan and the administration. For the whole past year, they've done everything they possibly could to show that they wouldn't cooperate in any kind of agreement with the United States. So there's no doubt that they're trying to get back at us for what happened in 1980, but there are all kinds of other motives as well.
1980, of course, was the year the Summer Games were held in Moscow, and the Carter administration boycotted them to protest the USSR's invasion of Afghanistan. And as far as one member of the International Olympic Committee, Raleigh Schwartz, is concerned, Soviets have been seething since 1980.
Oh, there's no question about it. They were furious. They were embarrassed. And they were just waiting. They just built it up that they were going it so that when they put the impact into not going, that we would suffer the same embarrassment. No question about it.
And as for the worry the Russians expressed about the safety and security of their athletes, Democratic Congressman Robert Matsui of California thinks that's just a smokescreen to cover a greater fear.
I would have to say that the Soviets aren't afraid of their security. They're afraid that there's going to be defection of their athletes, and that would be an international embarrassment to them, and I'm very sorry that they have had to take California as a way to try to embarrass the United States for their own weakness.
Defections has been on the mind of a group called Ban the Soviets. The group's leader, Dave Balsiger, said the members were waiting with open arms.
We had hoped to help more than 200 defectors, which we anticipated would be defecting from the Eastern Bloc to freedom here in the West. That is our major disappointment, that they're not coming.
Other than that, Balsiger says, good riddance. It was just about a foregone conclusion that when Russia said it was dropping out of the games, many other Soviet bloc teams would follow suit, and they did. First Bulgaria, then East Germany. Peter Uberoth, head of the committee which actually runs the Los Angeles Games, says he expects that kind of measured rejection in the days ahead.
There's a popular vitamin called One-A-Day. It's not an official anything. That I think we could characterize that we're going to be receiving a One-A-Day bitter pill.
For all athletes, disappointment again. Some of the same competitors who'd been shut out of the Olympics 4 years ago find themselves shut out again. But as a member of the U.S. women's basketball team, Cheryl Miller says,
I don't think that's going to stop the United States one bit from them doing their very best. It's just going to be that big question mark on who really would have won the gold medal in certain events.
The East Germans were sure to have taken their share of gold. They have one of the best teams. But as U.S. swimmer Mary Marr says,
in years to come, people won't remember that the East Germans weren't there, and I will still be the official, you know, gold medal winner.
Alberto Salazar, the marathon runner, looks at the Soviet boycott in a larger context.
I think it's going to be a death blow for the Olympic Games. They can't continue on in this format.
Speaking of formats, the Soviets apparently had been working on a contingency plan for some time. Correspondent Sue Masterman told us about that.
The strong rumor, which has circulated here since Easter, that there was a blueprint for an alternative Olympic Games known as the Red Olympics in the Bulgarian capital Sofia, has now been confirmed. Austrian Olympic Committee President Kurt Heller has said that in confidential talks with East European Olympic officials in the last fortnight, he has heard of such a plan. The Red Olympics, which are planned down to the last detail, were necessary because the Soviet Union needs to offer its Warsaw Pact allies an alternative. Sue Masterman, ABC News, Vienna.
At the beginning of the year, Jesse Jackson was successful in negotiating the release of a U.S. flyer, Robert Goodman, from Syrian captivity. Now, Jackson is trying his hand at trying to get the Soviets to change their mind. So far, Jackson's run into a stone wall, and he thinks the White House should get involved.
I really believe that the combination of American citizens rising up, an initiative by a president, could make a difference.
But the White House says the president will not get personally involved, although it wishes Jackson well in his efforts. President Reagan was busy with a selling job on Congress this week, trying to get the House to approve money for Central American operations. Mr. Reagan made a nationwide broadcast appeal during which he warned that communist elements would likely succeed in toppling the government of El Salvador if Congress rejected the aid. He also called the anti-Sandinista rebels in Nicaragua freedom fighters and said Congress must support their activities too. The president summed up his argument this way.
The simple questions are, will we support freedom in this hemisphere or not? Will we defend our vital interests in this hemisphere or not? Will we stop the spread of communism in this hemisphere or not? Will we act while there is still time?
Debate on the aid issue was going on at the time of Mr. Reagan's speech, and House Speaker Tip O'Neill had an immediate reaction.
I think it was he wanted more arms, more involvement, more ammunition, more force and more deaths. I think it was a call to arms. I'm looking for a call for peace, and I think that's what America is looking for, a call for peace.
The Democrats have been trying to link any aid to an improvement in the human rights status in El Salvador, especially with regard to the right-wing death squads. House GOP leader Bob Michael said the Democrats were being too restrictive.
Should we demand our allies improve their record in handling human rights abuses? Why, of course we should. But should we demand that they present us with the kind of absolutist guarantees demanded by this bill? No.
The Democratic amendments were beaten back, and the House went on to the main bill, providing millions in aid to El Salvador. ABC's Vic Ratner reported that the measure squeaked through thanks to key Democratic support.
The number two Democrat in the House, Jim Wright of Texas, broke with his party's leadership to support the president.
This is an agonizing moment for me.
Wright told his colleagues giving El Salvador more aid, but only with unbearable strings attached, was no way to treat a friend.
It's almost as though we had a friend who was bleeding, and we refused him a tourniquet.
Wright led over 50 Democrats who supported the president. This House action, however, is just preliminary. It authorizes $172 million in military aid for El Salvador this year and next, but there'll be other tough fights on actually handing over the money.
Correspondent Ratner says the House vote bought the president some more time to convince people, in and out of Congress, that his policies in Central America are the right ones. Salvadorans had gone to the polls at the beginning of the week to elect a president. José Napoleón Duarte, a moderate, was opposed by a conservative, Roberto Dubuisson. The election was observed by a U.S. delegation, most of whom felt the way Howard K. Smith did.
This is the most exuberant, enthusiastic electorate I've ever seen. These people truly want to be a democracy. They're begging to have a democracy, and I think that we would be violating our duty if we didn't help them to become a democracy. It's so obvious.
Smith, the former ABC News anchor, and the others on the delegation had gone to El Salvador to see that the election ran smoothly. By all reports, it didn't go badly at all, and President Reagan was pleased with the initial results.
All that I've seen so far is the projection of that Duarte is the winner, and with a sizable majority, and that's pleasing to us.
By week's end, Duarte had racked up 54% of the Salvadoran vote, assuring him of the presidency. In The Hague, a ruling from the World Court on U.S. involvement in the mining of Nicaraguan ports and harbors. Nicaragua had taken the case to The Hague, and correspondent Al Dale reports which way the decision went.
The court issued a lengthy decision requiring more than an hour for the chief judge to read. It asked the U.S. to, quote, cease and refrain from any action restricting access to or from Nicaraguan ports, and in particular the laying of mines, unquote. It said both countries should take no action to aggravate the current situation and specifically rejected the U.S. position that the case should be thrown out for lack of jurisdiction. The head of the U.S. legal team said later that the question of jurisdiction remains open despite this morning's ruling. The U.S. position on whether to take part in any further hearings, if they are scheduled, is to be worked out between the legal advisors here and the State Department. Al Dale, ABC News, The Hague.
A landmark decision in Utah this past week. A federal court judge ruling that low-level radiation from above-ground nuclear testing in the 1950s caused cancer among some of the people who got in the way of the fallout. The decision was applauded by Utah's Republican Senator Orrin Hatch.
They didn't give any warnings. They didn't tell the people about the effects of low-level ionizing radiation. They didn't give any type of hints or warnings or any other type of help, even though they knew that radioactive material was very damaging to the human being and could cause cancer.
The judge, Bruce Jenkins, considered 24 cases. He ruled 9 victims should share a fine of $2.6 million against the government. Jacqueline Sanders is the only person still alive among those 9. She's 38 now and has had cancer of the thyroid for the past 17 years. Ms. Sanders is concerned about the testing that's still going on.
People are more important to me than government decisions, and they are still doing the testing in Southern Nevada, which is still affecting us in case of venting, and they, according to the things I've read, are still waiting till the wind is blowing towards Southern Utah before they do underground tests in case of venting. So I feel we still have a long ways to go.
Ms. Sanders won $100,000 in the suit. The case opens the way for hundreds of other people to claim damages from the government. Vietnam veterans who said they'd been harmed by Agent Orange also reached a settlement with the chemical companies which made the defoliant. 7 makers of Agent Orange agreed to create a $180 million fund for the victims. Frank McCarthy heads one of the Vietnam veterans groups, which had been trying to get some kind of compensation.
Our first reaction was initially overwhelmed with joy. It's the first time in 6 years that we've seen any kind of justice being served to the Vietnam veterans.
But the president of a Philadelphia-based veterans group calls the agreement inadequate and says he will try to stop it from taking effect. Gary Hart tried to stop the snowballing campaign of Walter Mondale this week, and if he didn't stop it, he slowed it down a little by winning the Ohio and Indiana primaries. Correspondent Irv Chapman reports how Hart pulled off the victories.
Walter Mondale did well in industrial areas of northwestern Indiana, but not well enough to overcome Gary Hart's 5-4 margin in rural central and southern Indiana. Similarly, Mondale's showing in the Cleveland area was not as strong as he required. To top Hart's success with rural Ohio voters and his surprise win in the city of Youngstown. Mondale won both city and suburbs of Baltimore and the major suburban county outside Washington, D.C., giving him Maryland by a wide margin. North Carolina the same. Irv Chapman, ABC News Election Center, New York.
But as ABC political director Hal Bruno points out, the numbers still don't add up to a Hart nomination this summer.
Gary Hart is able to go all the way to the convention and cause Walter Mondale a lot of trouble.
but it's very doubtful that he can overcome that delegate lead. Those numbers simply can't be refuted, even though the delegates are unbound. As long as there's a gap of about 600 delegates there, you're not going to see a big shifting away from Mondale or the uncommitted's going to Gary Hart. If anything, they're going to go to Walter Mondale. But he's going to have to work much harder now as a result of losing Ohio.
And the number three man in the Democratic race continued to build what may become a bargaining power base at the San Francisco convention. Michael Connor reports.
Jesse Jackson did not score major upsets anywhere yesterday, but he claimed to be pleased by his strong showings in big cities, such as Baltimore, Indianapolis, and Cleveland. Jackson told supporters he would continue pressing the Democrats and Walter Mondale for changes in the party's delegate selection process and for the elimination of alleged voting impediments for blacks and minorities. Jackson indicated he was willing to risk a tough fight at the convention. This is a game for big boys, he said. If you can't stand the heat, you should get out of the kitchen. Jackson also flatly predicted that Walter Mondale will not win the nomination on the first ballot. Michael Connor, ABC News, with the Jackson campaign in Raleigh, North Carolina.
A day of fun at one of the largest amusement parks in the East turned into a night of tragedy this week. Fire broke out at one of the main attractions at Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey, killing eight people. Correspondent John Butler was at the scene a few hours after the fire was put out.
I'm standing in front of what was the haunted castle, now burned and melted. You can smell the smoke still. The ceiling of the front of the castle completely collapsed. Steel support beams that held up the ceiling of the castle all burned through. There's nothing left. You get a feeling of the incredible heat that came through from this fire. Officials say the temperature inside the haunted castle reached 2,000 degrees. Obviously, anyone trapped inside wouldn't have stood a chance of surviving. John Butler, ABC News, Jackson, New Jersey.
The start of Quebec's provincial legislature was interrupted early this week by a Canadian soldier who raked the assembly building's main hall with submachine gun fire. Three people were killed outright, more than a dozen others injured. The soldier, identified later as Dennis Lorty, made some incoherent statements and was calmed down by the legislature's sergeant-at-arms, René Jalbert. Jalbert, a World War II and Korean War veteran, talked with Lorty for about 4 hours. And provincial police officer Maurice Briand told us it paid off.
After negotiation, we went there to the bureau where he was sitting with the sergeant of arms, and he didn't make any moves or anything. He just put his hands and we took him.
The next day, a man who said he'd been troubled by the incident at Quebec's assembly building wounded a couple of people with a shotgun and held police at bay for a while before he gave himself up. Another member of the official Washington team turned in his jersey this week. He's President Reagan's chief economic advisor, Martin Feldstein.
I've been planning this for quite a while. I wanted to announce it 2 months in advance so that everybody would have plenty of time to make the proper adjustments.
Feldstein was appointed to the post in August of 1982 and says,
it's been an interesting and an exciting time here. There's no question about that, but probably every 2 years has its interesting moments.
Interesting translates to controversial. Feldstein often disagreed with the White House on budget deficits and their impact on inflation and interest rates. His most recent disagreement was just this week, when banks raised their prime interest rate and the White House criticized the Federal Reserve. Feldstein said he didn't think the banks had done anything wrong. There was a big jump in retail sales last month. Sandra Schaber of Chase Econometrics tells us the likely reason why.
Consumers are going back out to the stores and shopping again after the awful weather in March. That's partly what the numbers mean. It's a rebound from really terrible weather conditions.
The wholesale price index held steady last month, and as correspondent Tony Sargent tells us, that was due mainly to lower food costs.
Wholesale food prices turned around last month. Through the winter, grocery stores and restaurants had been paying more, especially for vegetables and fruits. But the weather damage happened mostly in December. By last month, some new crops were coming in from Florida and Texas. That pushed fresh produce prices down sharply during April.
That could change if weather forecasters are correct. The National Weather Service says the east and west coasts are prime targets for flooding, and the agency's Robert Clark says,
it's going to have an impact on agriculture in that there's a lot of fields that are sitting out there with a lot of water in them, and it's going to delay plantings in many areas.
There's already been much flooding in the south, and it brought together the people of Fort Wayne, Indiana, this week. In 1982, Fort Wayne had been flooded, and the people there got emergency shipments of food and clothing from the folks in Hazard, Kentucky. Now Hazard is having its problems with high water, and Fort Wayne residents are returning the favor. Fort Wayne's Mayor Win Moses.
They really deserve our help. I've never met more generous people who gave of themselves with a great deal of enthusiasm when they saw other American neighbors were in trouble.
The people of Fort Wayne put together $20,000 worth of food and clothing for the residents of Hazard, Kentucky. A little less for calls, a little more for information, Stephen Ogg explains.
The Federal Communications Commission says it's ordered AT&T to cut all of its long-distance rates, both domestic and international, by 6.1%. That's effective May 25th. But at the same time, the commission approved for the first time a charge for long-distance information, 50 cents a month. Although the first two long-distance phone calls to information will be free each month. So if you have lots of long-distance phone books, you may save a little money. But if you have to make a lot of long-distance calls and you don't know the numbers, it'll cost you. AT&T's argument in favor of a long-distance information charge is that many people will simply get their long-distance numbers free from AT&T and then use a competing long-distance company to make the call. Stephen Ogg, ABC News, Washington.
I'll have one final story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
It's athletes versus MS.
When I see the tremendous amount of power generated in the legs, arms, and bodies of finely conditioned athletes, and then when I watch young people afflicted with multiple sclerosis, the mysterious crippler of young adults, it tears my heart apart, and I want to do whatever I can to help fight MS.
This is Frank Gifford, and that was Eric Barsegian speaking for all the top athletes who have joined forces to raise funds for MS research and patient care sponsored by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Athletes like Lee Trevino.
I don't have MS, but over 500,000 victims of MS and related disorders may be invalids, one way or the other, all their lives. When your MS volunteer calls, please give generously.
Janet Lynn asks you to help. So do the Unser brothers and Billie Jean King. But Muhammad Ali says it best for all of us.
Gonna whoop MS, now that's the latest. And I know you're gonna help because you're the greatest.
It's athletes versus MS. This message from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society.
It used to be common practice for men in the Old West to advertise for mail order brides. It worked for them, so Ken Tugwell is trying his luck. Tugwell has a little more going for him than the pioneers of yesteryear. The 25-year-old Englishman is good-looking, has a charming personality, a degree from Cambridge, a Rolls-Royce, and an Aston Martin, a family home in England, and a villa in Spain. In short, he's loaded. Why is he advertising for a wife? Because there's 100 million women out there.
I could never hope to meet all these 100 million young ladies by traveling around the world. If I hopped on a plane tomorrow and flew over the world shaking hands with each one, by the time I was 90, I might have met 15,000, 20,000, but never 100 million. And I'm sure that the ideal partner for me in life is out there somewhere, and I'm determined to find her.
Shouldn't be too hard, Ken. Not hard at all. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Directed by Jerry Welch. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Larry Farina. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.